During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Anyway, thanks again to Jordan DeFoot for joining us last segment. Sneeze emoji, sneeze emoji, sneeze emoji.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That one takes a double meaning whenever I spend every commercial break blowing my nose. I don't know if it's...
Because of the cold weather.
It's not...
It's bad for you.
It's not true. That's not how that works. That's a myth.
It gave me diabetes.
The cold gave me diabetes.
Facts. Facebook taught me this.
Speaking of Facebook and also Twitch and YouTube, if you want to watch the show and see it with your own eyes, you can watch our live stream wherever you want on the Sports Radio 810 Facebook, Twitch, or YouTube channels. You get your pick of the three. You can also leave your comments and chat along in the comment section.
Chaotic Warrior says Marlon's man is a cool dude. Met him a couple times.
I was going to ask if you knew who he was in this comment, because Chaotic Warrior said he's also a very cool dude.
I meant to mention that when we were talking about Marlon's it, but it man. Popped up during that segment. So Chaotic Warrior, we're a little rusty, I would say, acknowledging the Twitch chat tonight. It's been a while.
I'm out of practice. Yeah. I mean, I would say this whole show's been rusty.
Yeah,
you know, we're shaking it off still.
To a degree, I would say we never left.
Yeah.
A short 40-minute segment in the second hour. Bleeding into the 8 o'clock hour.
Uh-huh.
Because we went the first 14 minutes of that interview talking about if Clark Hunt buys McChickens.
We are in mid-season form, but we're still the Lions, you know? That's how I feel. Let's talk about all that with Jordan Foote. You can follow him on Twitter at FootNoted. You can read his work at ArrowheadReport.com, a part of Sports Illustrated's Fan Nation Network. They do some good work over there, mostly Jordan. You can also, of course, listen to the Ruffin the Kicker Chiefs podcast. Today's episode features a real jerk. It's me. I was Jordan's guest for this morning's episode. So that's available wherever you get your podcast as well. Jordan, first things first here. This is what we spent the open of the show talking about. When do you think was the last time that Clark Hunt went through a drive-thru?
I'd say within the past year he's been through one. I'm not going to put him above that. I think he has. Now, he probably hasn't really within, like, several years, but I'm going to have faith in him and say that it was within the past year, even with COVID and all that good stuff.
See, there's no chance he's been since the pandemic. It would be the parade, since the parade, although maybe immediately after he wanted to, you know, be out on the town a little bit. Well, go ahead and continue to bring me through this vision of yours. What drive-through is Clark Hunt in a way that is not completely alien in this beautiful world you're painting for us?
I don't know. Maybe he wanted some Chick-fil-A or wanted, you know, one of those, like, not – obviously Chick-fil-A is still fast food because you can get it through the drive-thru, all that good stuff. But, you know, it's – I don't know. They're nicer, I guess. I just like to see Clark Hunt going through a drive-thru. And I've been through several drive-thrus in the past year. I know Clark Hunt is not only in a different world. He's in, like, several different universes ahead of me. But – I just would like to think one day, you know, someone in his family said, I want insert food that requires a drive-through. And he said, you know what? Dang it. We're not going to have one of the billion, you know, food deliveries. But then again, if Joshua Briscoe and Jordan Foote can talk on a Tuesday night yesterday about, oh, you know, I'm hungry, let's have someone deliver it, then I would assume... Then again, Clark Hunt would say, you know, I have oodles of money more than them. With that said, I do have a more important question, I think, than the Clark Hunt drive-thru one.
Okay, I'm ready.
Was that sneeze emoji, like, intro cut today, or was that from a prior time I came on?
Oh, that's in the archives.
Yeah.
No, that's in the archives.
Oh, man.
Beard's
that's
cut that
beautiful.
At some point.
Yeah, no, we you know how, like, The Simpsons did everything first? We have a liner for everything.
I've had people here ask me why we don't put our liners in the system, and like Jason Justice is like a little bit annoyed that we don't have our liners in the system. It's like we have hundreds of them,
hundreds,
and we try to play something that is very specific to either what happened in the previous segment or what is coming up in the next segment.
Yeah, you know, I wonder, do you think Jason ever asked, I don't know, Salvador Dali why he didn't put his art all on the same size canvases? Why they weren't all painted in perfect realism? Because artists do things differently, Jason. That is hurtful that he would not respect that. Did you have a question, Rudy, idea that you wanted to run by Jordan here before we do some cheesy things?
I think I came up with a potential Clark Hunt went through a drive-thru. A part of me feels like he might have had to when Whataburger opened up their very first one. Like, for a little picture photo op.
You think he sat in a drive-thru for 4 hours?
No. He was, like, the first person in line. I'm not saying he sat in the...
Interesting.
Because let's be honest. A Whataburger is not in Kansas City without Patrick Mahomes. There is a Chiefs-Whataburgers relationship. That's just a fact.
We talked about Paxton Lynch earlier. Maybe. The butterfly effect. If the Chiefs draft Paxton Lynch, there's no Whataburger in Kansas City. Imagine explaining that to somebody in a time machine in 2016. Listen, if the Chiefs draft Paxton Lynch, quarterback out of Memphis?
Yep.
Yeah.
The Chiefs, the city of Kansas City, sorry.
That's my skill.
That's Rudy's skill. The Chiefs draft Paxton Lynch here, and then Whataburger is another decade away from coming to Kansas City.
Maybe never.
So, big brain thinking here, and I'm almost certain that this wasn't the case, but Patrick Mahomes said during the bye week he was able to sneak over for like a midnight rendezvous at Whataburger. What if it was like a... not Chiefs-wide thing, obviously, because some of those guys probably, A, don't like Whataburger, B, couldn't care less about it.
Mm-hmm.
That makes me think either, you know, I also can't picture Clark Hunt and Patrick Mahomes meeting up at, like, late-night Whataburger, but also maybe that's, like, not just the Patrick Mahomes thing, and if there is a time and a place for guys to get over there, and use their, you know, money to their advantage and make that happen. Perhaps that's it. I mean, I don't know. I guess
Clark Hunt could build a Whataburger in his backyard.
No, hold on. I think Jordan's onto something here. Because here's the thing. There are five people within the Chiefs organization who are truly, like, by themselves, right? It's Clark Hunt. It's Andy Reid. It's Brett Veach. Mark Donovan, Patrick Mahomes.
Clark Hunt employs the other four people there, though.
But those are the
five. He is so much richer than the other people.
Those are the five. Okay. Here's the thing, though. But if you're Clark Hunt and your quarterback's like, hey, like it's 11:59, he's like, you up? And he's like, hey, you want to go over to Whataburger real fast? You don't say no. What have we learned? You keep your quarterback happy.
Bigger question. How much would Clark Hunt have to pay? And I want to hear from Rudy, too. I should do that more often. Rudy and Josh, we'll go with Josh first, I guess. How much would you have to get paid from Clark Hunt's, like, wait in, not a Whataburger line today, like, I'd assume it's still outrageously long, but, like, within the first few days. Like, within the first 7 days of it opening, how much would you have to get paid from Clark Hunt to not only pick it up, but then deliver it to his house?
$50 in gas.
$49.99, I'll pay for the gas myself.
That's it?
To do one Uber Eats delivery? Yeah. Yeah, I would
have to wait for like 4 hours.
I got a podcast.
I got my Switch.
Oh, my God.
And I'm not going to leave my car in idle. I'll just turn it off. I'll just sit there and chill.
Oh, you'd have to pay me at least like $300 or $400, maybe even $500. Like, that would be the most expensive Whataburger trip anyone would ever pay for in their entire life.
My time is not that valuable.
Touché.
We did play this game a little bit earlier because I mentioned that Beards is a bad person to play this game with because, like, Beards, how much would you have to get paid for you to give yourself a paper cut? And he'll be like, $10 million. And we're like, Beards, that's not realistic. For Rudy, if it's like, hey, Rudy, how much would I have to pay you to jump off this balcony and land on your head? He'd be like, I don't know, $750?
I can make the jump.
And they are both on the extremes of that. I think I'm much closer to the middle, where I will pay someone to deliver my food through an app. But if Clark Hunt wanted to hand me – I also made this point earlier, Jordan. If I had oil baron money, I would just have a bag of hundreds so I could just have – I could just take a little Benny Frank out of my bag and just offer it to a random person and then ask them to do something for me for $100. You can have this $100 bill if you'll go get my lunch and then bring it back to me. Whatever. I feel like I would do that all the time.
Clark Hunt probably, now that I think of it, hasn't been through a drive-thru in the past year. I don't know if I've held a Benny Frank in my hand in the past year. Like, with COVID and, you know, everyone going debit, I can't think of the last time. Obviously, I don't have many Benny Franks to begin with, but when I have had Benny Franks, I think they've been digital. I don't think I've held one in the past year.
I always make sure to be able to hold tightly a bill of our greatest president ever. It's a weekly. I try to at least once a week just hold tightly
on
onto our greatest president ever.
Because Washington's on the one.
Yeah, Benjamin Franklin, the best president this United States of America has ever had. And make sure to hold him at least once a week.
Lincoln's on the 5, correct?
Correct. Jackson's on the 20, right?
Yeah.
Skip the 10.
Well, I don't know who's on the
10's Jefferson, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just move Jackson.
50's a forgotten bill.
50 is Grant? Is that right?
Ulysses Grant?
Because I don't care about those Benjamins.
Yeah, might as well be Joshua Briscoe at that point.
Greatest president ever.
Who's your favorite president ever, Jordan?
I don't know.
Why is it Benjamin Franklin? 50 is Grant.
It has to be Benjamin Franklin.
I was going to say Kennedy, but, like, I don't know enough any of these guys. John. I don't know enough about these guys. I just think that Kennedy was cool and hip, and, like, back then I would have been like, this guy is it. But then I'm just not intelligent enough to have that conversation, I guess. And we're on the radio, and I don't want to ruin your guys' Twitch/Facebook stream, so we have to keep the politics talk to a minimum.
Yeah, he didn't have longevity for my liking. I feel bad for making that joke, but man, it's
good. Dude, it's such a good joke! Rudy said that in my ears, and I was not going to speak until he said that on the radio. It's a good joke. Saying that John F. Kennedy is lower on your presidential power rankings because he didn't have the longevity is such a good joke. It's been a long time, Rudy. We can make that joke.
It has been a long
time. No, that's quality, especially coming from Rudy. Rudy always gets, like, a couple bonus points, but that one, that was quality stuff.
He's the Jamal Charles of presidents. He's still a Hall of Famer
book,
but didn't have longevity.
But elite talent. You saw it. It was special. It was different.
This is the first time I've been able to put the almost in almost entirely sports. It's almost always. I come on, and, like, Josh has already had a ton of fun conversations, which, I mean, he did have Kent freaking Swanson on. But it's usually I come on, Josh ignores me for about 2.5 minutes. Then says, oh, Jordan's on the other line. Then continues whatever he's talking about. Then picks back up, and we immediately talk Chiefs, and there's, like, one, like, plug at the end, and then we get out. So this was refreshing.
I did have that thought earlier because I don't want to spoil any plans for maybe, you know, typical guests in the rotation that may be returning soon as we get some more shows back as football season winds down and all of that. But I did have the thought of, like, we do just have you on to help us talk about Chief stuff. And we'll probably talk Royals with you at some point during the summer. But you don't have, like, a nonsense bit that is, you know, intrinsic to your time with us here. So I think that keeping that in mind, you know, really developing that part of your game, I think could be huge. And maybe you just come in with a fun presidential fact, you know? Maybe you just update your presidential power rankings every week.
How about, like, a fun University of Kentucky stat or something every week?
Well, they're all fun.
Like that very much, personally. So let's talk about the Chiefs here.
Why should Will Levis be the Chiefs' next quarterback?
Aren't you going to lose your head coach?
No, he signed an extension. We're good.
Yeah, no college football coach has ever signed an extension and left shortly thereafter.
It's literally never happened.
Literally never.
Contracts are written in blood, sweat, and tears.
And for
Big Blue Nation for life.
Kentucky football, it's mostly been tears.
I mean, we're a football school, so, like, you don't leave a premier. Like,
who did they lose to this year?
Nobody that bad, actually. Georgia,
like,
Tennessee.
What, 3 in a row? Tennessee was rough.
And Tennessee's good. Mississippi State.
Okay.
Finished second in the SEC East. First, like, the second time we've done that. But
Jordan,
like,
you want to just...
We're like a top 10 college football job, though. You don't leave those jobs.
Yeah, Kentucky's
USC,
a top 10. Yeah.
Bama.
Yeah.
Kentucky.
I would say Kentucky's right there with Notre Dame, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Those jobs you just don't leave.
Honestly, I would say Kentucky's above those jobs because our coach didn't leave.
That's the joke that I was making. At least we got two passes at it. Shoot or shoot.
We got a Stoops, okay? Everything's fine.
You have a Stoops.
You have a Stoops. There's two good Stoops brothers. The third one is not very good at coaching football, but we got one of the good ones.
Where's the third Stoops?
Stoops' brother.
The Mike Stoops was at Oklahoma when Bob was there. I don't know where he's at now.
We really do waste Jordan's time, I feel like, more than our other guests.
I brought this up.
Defensive coordinator, Florida Atlantic.
Was that worth interrupting Jordan for?
It was.
Jordan, you and I talked literally yesterday, as we have both now pointed out, about a bunch of the things currently going on around the Chiefs. We can also begin, I suppose, to pivot from Broncos to Raiders because we're at that halfway point in the week. But I do still continue to be on an everlasting search for somebody to come up with something especially poignant from Sunday's game. Kent had a couple of good things that I thought were interesting. But whenever you've gone back to reevaluate what it is that we've talked about, what it is that we saw against the Broncos, do you feel like you have a point of reference for something that you learned in this game that you did not know going into it?
Man, you always take away little bits and pieces. Like, I think we talked about the wideout snap distribution.
Yep.
It's no longer a, like Andy Reid said, some games aren't yours and some games are in regards to McCall Harmon. I think they're literally, and I don't want to be dramatic, I hardly ever overreact or I don't try to. I think they're effectively like throwing in the towel on him being a prominent piece mm-hmm. as a wide receiver. Mm-hmm. He can still be I hate using the gadget label, but a gadget guy, kind of get those jet sweeps, those misdirections, get him in space, let him use his speed. He's not even returning right now. Like, that is not a good sign for his future with the team. Josh Gordon, his snap count went down big time. He didn't even receive a target, if I'm not mistaken, against the Broncos. Mm. So, no longer, I believed for quite a while when Reed said it was Gordon's time soon and it was eventually going to pop for him. He shouldn't need this long to get in football shape. He looks to be in great shape out there. The you know, physical freak that everyone claims him to be. I think part of it's definitely on Josh Gordon for not getting open as much. Also, this is kind of what people should have been worried about when the Chiefs signed him. One, he hadn't played football in a year and a half or 2 years. Two, it's a timing-based offense that requires, like, finesse and route running and, you know, consistent hands. Not to say Josh Gordon drops a ton, but he doesn't always get open the easiest. It's hard for him to get separation sometimes, especially if he's lost even half a step. That's a really big deal. He's not a tight end. He's a wide receiver in the NFL. So I think wideout-wise, we learned a lot. And then defensively, I think Melvin Ingram has definitely solidified his place in Kansas City as not only a solid player, but even I call him a good one. His run defense has been very stout. The pressure rate since he's joined the team has been great. Safety-wise, Dan Sorensen, we still didn't learn too much about him, I don't think, besides he's going to keep fighting, which is, I mean, good for him. Linebacker-wise, I think Willie Gay Jr. was the standout of mm-hmm. that game. He came a few inches away from a pick six, what would have likely been a pick six. He had like either six or eight tackles. He played really well. The game, it's the, you know, stereotypical, the game is slowing down, like that cliche that everyone says. I don't think he's quite there yet in terms of him being decisive against play action and everything really slowing down for him. But he's still really inexperienced. He didn't have a ton of games. Reps in college. He came into the league with that PFF rating and coverage that everyone kind of clung to and said, well, you know, Willie Gay is going to be the next Derek Johnson. It's taking him a while to still get a grasp on that, and he's still not going to be the dime linebacker until possibly 2022. With that said, he really seems to be coming along pretty well. He is the most athletic linebacker they have by a wide margin, unless you consider Dorian O'Daniel. Like, he's obviously up there, but he's not getting the reps.
Yeah.
So I think a few things stuck out, some good and some not so good.
Well, so, I mean, we're at this point now, and one thing that Kent mentioned that I thought was a good point was that there what we learned for sure is that a bye week renaissance for the offense didn't happen. They didn't, you know, assess that and then come back with a fundamentally different looking offense without any of their same problems and all of that. And so kind of in that realm, if not specifically to that point, whenever you look at this team right now, very much in the home stretch, very much totally in control of themselves in the AFC West, in control of where they're going to land in the AFC to a certain extent. They would need some help, but, you know, we'll see how that would all shake out. But whenever you look at where we are now, or you can no longer talk about being early in the season or even just talk about the bye week, what are you worried about with this team figuring out or executing or whatever it may be by the time the playoffs actually get here?
Worried that they're not going to do it, man. I mean, at a certain point, you are who you are as a team. And the Chiefs, I told you yesterday, they've gotten a longer leash than just about any other program in the NFL would. We've seen that offense play well before. Andy Reid said it himself. He's seen all those guys do terrific things and dominate in the past. It's not just one thing, though. It's inconsistent play calling. It's being conservative and then putting your foot on the gas when you shouldn't. It's Patrick Mahomes being up and down. It's Tyreek Hill dropping passes. It's Travis Kelce being injured and dropping passes. It's Mecole Hardman not breaking out. It's Clyde Edwards-Helaire being injured and then coming back and still not being featured heavily in the receiving game. There's just a lot of things that aren't falling correctly. And I said before, it's a rhythm game. I genuinely believe in that. I think if they can come out against the Raiders and play a good game, if they can come out against the Chargers and play a good one where they have literally a back-to-back, because, I mean, we can go through their schedule right now. They started in Cleveland, played pretty decent. Baltimore played pretty decent, but then had the fumble at the end. Chargers, the turnovers killed them. The Eagles game, late, they played well. Buffalo got blown out. Washington played well. Tennessee got blown out. The Giants, they didn't play particularly well. The Packers, the same thing. Raiders, Cowboys, Broncos, they just haven't been able to string together those offensive performances back to back to back. So if they can settle into a groove, it's going to be a focus thing where they appear to be magically more focused. They suddenly appear to be connecting receiver and quarterback-wise, getting on the same page. It's hard to improve that stuff during a season. That's kind of off-season stuff and training camp stuff. I think the Mahomes injury kind of not stunted his growth, but the Chiefs maybe expected him to automatically adjust to a new line. And the loss of Sammy Watkins, I think that took longer than people expected it to. He's still learning and still getting better. They also forget he's 26 years old or however old he is. They just need to settle into a groove. And the defense did it and now is playing dominant football. I think the same thing's possible for the offense. It's weird that I had a lot of faith in the defense at least playing better. I'm not entirely sure the offense is going to snap out of this. It's not going to be very pretty if come playoff time they're putting up 22, 24 points against some good offenses. With that said, we've seen them do it before, and I think they're definitely just in need of probably two good games in a row. They'll be back on track.
Which obviously isn't a guarantee, so I think that's interesting. If we don't see some sort of rejuvenation or something that makes you believe that, hey, you know what, they are going to have both, you know, the best defense perhaps in the Spags era here in Kansas City, if things continue going the way they've been trending for a while, and the offense gets right. If they get there, then I'm prepared to pick them on the road at New England and Mac Jones. But if they don't do that, it all of a sudden now becomes a much larger question. And I know I've seen your many tweets about the quarterback who I just mentioned, who just won a football game throwing three passes. I know that you are aware of what the rest of the conference is bringing to the table here. So where would you feel comfortable projecting the Chiefs in comparison to the rest of the conference at this point, just with the version of the team that we have seen over the last 5 weeks or so?
Yeah, man, it's I've said this before, and this is a very, very, very basic, simplified version of how I feel about football. Mm-hmm. And there's data that says, you know, the top seed is more likely to win. The teams that are consistently great are more likely to win, blah, blah, blah. I think weird stuff happens in the playoffs. You just have to get in and have the best coach and have the best quarterback. That gives you a terrific advantage. If you're the most talented team or close to it, and you can simply find your way in, you can get hot and really play well. You can also look really, really, really good, and it's entirely possible you get upset. Both of those are either more or less likely, depending on the outcome, or I guess the positive or negative in those situations. But, you know, the Chiefs could look really good for the next 5 weeks, then come out flat in their first playoff game and lose, or they could not figure anything out and then suddenly look good in their first playoff game in the entire run. Like, the entire AFC almost, among the playoff field, I could see three or four of those teams making really deep playoff runs. I could also see those same teams dropping their first game in like an embarrassing fashion. I think the Chiefs are, I think they're past the losing in embarrassing fashion thing. We haven't seen them lose in 5 weeks. We don't know if they lose, what the offense looks like when they're trailing big, stuff like that. We've seen them trail big in the playoffs before, and they put some magical stuff together. I don't have faith in them right now to do that. So you compare them to the rest of the AFC. If Tennessee gets Derrick Henry back, they're going to be scary. They're slowly getting healthier week by week. It's a long-haul thing for them. I don't believe in Ryan Tannehill putting the team on his back in a playoff setting, so they need Henry. I think the Colts are an underrated sleeper team, but that's really about it. The Chargers are a year away from doing damage, I think. The Ravens, they've gotten lucky a lot this year and gotten by playing lazy football. Like, not to say the 2020 Chiefs are the 2021 Ravens or vice versa, but it's going to catch up to them at some point, I think. It started to against the Steelers last week. The Bills, I don't know what to think about them. Like, they just haven't looked good since they started off and quote-unquote won their Super Bowl. In week five, I think New England's the biggest threat. I think if they can dictate the game and, like you said earlier, get out to a bit of a lead, you know, a 10-0, a 14-3, something like that, Bill Belichick knows how to confuse Patrick Mahomes, or at least he has in the past. Get out to a good first half, play conservative football. Can the Chiefs find it and then to come back? Maybe. With that said, if the Chiefs start out strong, I like Mac Jones as much as the next guy, if not a little bit more. I don't trust him to do what it needs to be done in a playoff setting to win those big games. Like, he's a rookie. He isn't the most physically gifted quarterback. He's very smart, but still so inexperienced. And I just haven't seen him do it yet. So it all depends on how they start, I think. And they've been starting off well. But at a certain point, you have to be able to sustain that. And the Chiefs haven't been able to do it for four quarters this year.
One of the interesting things there is you mentioned that you think there are, like, I think you said, like, three or four teams you could see making a deep run. And it's funny to me because two of them literally have to. A conference championship game is a deep run in my mind. And two teams have to end up there, which is, I also think, kind of the interesting thing about where the Chiefs are at right now. Because if they have two or three really good offensive performances in a row, if they have it against the Chargers and Bengals or whatever, well, then I think you can play that game of, like, you could bet right now on a Chiefs-Patriots AFC championship game rematch, but it's Mac Jones instead of Tom Brady. Or one of those teams you feel pretty good about making it, or you just feel good about the Chiefs, whatever. But right now, where the Patriots just won a game in spite of them not trusting their quarterback, the elements were obviously a factor, I understand that, but, like, it was jarring to watch. And a rookie, nonetheless, you know, with you know, putting that in the equation as well, you get Bill Belichick and a rookie quarterback, and then you get all of these other 8-4 teams and a couple of 7-5 teams below that, where I don't think you can be shocked. If I told you right now, the Patriots, Titans, Ravens, Chiefs, Chargers, Bengals, Bills, if any of those seven teams, that could be your playoff picture, I guess. If I told you any of those seven teams were in the AFC championship game, you simply, I don't think, could be shocked by any of those. Steelers, I would be very surprised. You mentioned the Colts, I would be very surprised. The Raiders and Browns, I would be, you know, surprised. But whenever you just have sort of that, just that slushy of seven teams that are all pretty good, but none of them are great, it's weird for the Chiefs to be in that spot because they haven't been there in a while. But I don't think it's a terrible place to be. It's just not as fun as the last couple of years have been.
Yeah, and everyone has talked about this, really. They've just set the bar so high.
Yep.
That, like, when New England was winning ugly games and making the playoffs every year, it was a dynasty, and obviously they had the Super Bowl success to back it up, but it was impressive how they could win double-digit games every year and make stuff happen. The Chiefs are going to end up winning double-digit games. They're going to end up making the playoffs. They are on a five-game winning streak right now. It just has been in a different way this year. And if they had entirely different weapons on offense and Mahomes had no Kelce, no Hill, stuff like that, it'd be a different conversation where it wasn't the Chiefs had played good or elite football, all-time great football before on offense, and people don't believe in them to do it. We've seen it happen. They've seen it happen. They believe in it. Most people believe in it. I don't want to say I don't expect them to snap out of this eventually. With that said, it very, very well could be something that sticks with them for the rest of the year. And that's going to be scary because that really lowers their ceiling. But they really haven't shown consistency. I think you just have to hope that they can luck into, quote unquote, figuring it out down the stretch this year, or have some good moments in the playoffs.
Last thing, real quick, we'll get you out of here. Give me a loose feeling of what you're looking at right now for the Raiders this weekend.
Yeah, man, I just talked to earlier today Hondo Carpenter.
Yes!
Raider maven. A really good time. Hondo's a great guy.
National champion.
Chatted about the game. He brought up, you know, he thinks that the Raiders are going to lose the game. We both picked the Chiefs, which I've been on record. The Chiefs are 2-0 against my picking against them this year. So I'm back on the picking the Chiefs side.
Excellent.
I think it's going to be 34-21. I think the Chiefs are going to put up plenty of points. It's going to be one of those. We're going to have the same conversation, just like we had after the first Raiders game, except it's going to be a little bit more competitive. I think it'll include, you know, a garbage time touchdown or something like that, where are the Chiefs fixed? They looked great, blah, blah, blah. Then they're going to have a short week in L.A. against the Chargers. Just like they came into the Cowboys game, didn't play great football. That game is going to tell pretty much everything I think we need to know, not only about the Chiefs, but about the AFC West and the Chargers as a whole. But they're going to have a good game Sunday, I expect. Then it's going to come down to on Thursday, can they finally put two in a row together?
It is an incredible stretch of football that the Chiefs have with three AFC West games in a, 17-day span. Not good for human bodies or good for the players playing it as a whole or good for maybe the quality of play even. But it'll be good for us to watch, and I look forward to seeing those two games go that way as well. Jordan, thank you for letting us switch up the format for your time with us here tonight. Thank you for making the time for us here tonight. Go order your favorite fast food, and Rudy will go pick it up for you for $50.
Yep, all about player safety and all about Rudy DoorDashing food. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you, Jordan. I'll tell you what. I mean, here's the thing: the power of money. I want Rudy to take rest. You know, I want Rudy to seem less tired generally. But if Jordan was like, Rudy, I'll give you $50 to go pick up this food and bring it to my house, I'd be like, Rudy, we can end the show early if you need to, so you can go make that happen.
I almost got hit in the face with my mic.
Your microphone almost just concussed you. Yes.
Yeah, I'm awake now.
Yeah, because you just got domed by a microphone.
Wake me up real fast.
Yeah, that's also true. Follow Jordan on Twitter at footnoted, FOOTENOTED. He just does great work that you can see through there, not just on the football side with arrowheadreport.com, but also with Inside of the Royals, and he does some basketball in there as well. Just a great follow and a really smart dude that I can say all this about because he hung up before I said all the nice things. Because
that's the trick.
We use humor as a wobbly shield against sincerity around these parts. It's just what we do. So follow him there. You can also check out the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast, which Jordan is the host of. Most recent guest, me. If you're listening to this and think, man, I wish I could hear Jordan and Josh talk for another 30, actually 45, nearly an hour. For nearly 60 minutes, you can check that out wherever you get your podcasts as well. Just search for Roughing the Kicker. We will take a break here on Almost Entirely Sports. Whenever we come back, I have no idea what we're going to talk about, but we've got about 25 minutes of show left. Got to play some commercials. We'll get to the end of our Wednesday all in one piece. That much I can promise. That's next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I'm really not trying to be defensive or rude to you, YouTube commenter. I'm sorry that I almost certainly sound defensive here.
He's just a mean boy.
I'm just a mean boy. I'm this mean to everyone, not just you.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Can't confirm.
But I all shut up, beards.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Here's a crazy story that does partially appeal to one part of my sports fandom, but also will appeal to everyone in Kansas City if you look at it at the right angle here. The Arizona Coyotes, the hockey team, may be locked out of their arena by the city of Glendale, Arizona, for unpaid arena charges and delinquent tax bills. That's paraphrasing a tweet from Katie Strang of The Athletic. I was going to pull a chunk here from the actual story up in The Athletic. On December 3rd, the Arizona Department of Revenue filed a tax lien notice in Maricopa County against Ice Hockey Arizona LLC, the company that owns the Coyotes, for more than $1.3 million in unpaid state and city taxes. The city of Glendale, which has been locked in a lengthy dispute with the Coyotes over delinquent bills, has already notified ASM, the Gila River Arena Management Company, and Coyotes team president and CEO Xavier Gutierrez of the cancellation of the Coyotes' business license. The city of Glendale is owed approximately $250,000 in unpaid city taxes, according to a letter from city manager Kevin Phelps to Gutierrez, and the remaining account is owed to the state. The state tax lien notice, obtained via public records request, asserts that the Coyotes owe taxes dating back to June 2020. They will have until 5 p.m. Mountains. This is crazy. This is a close of business COB offer here. The Coyotes demand, really. The Coyotes, according to the notice sent to ASM and to the team, will have until 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time on December 20th to pay the outstanding arena invoices from the 2020-21 season, as well as the outstanding tax bill. If they do not, this is crazy, if they do not settle up the remaining debt by that time, the city of Glendale has instructed ASM to deny team employees access to the arena and the offices within the arena used as administrative space. Arena vendors would also be locked out. This is sort of a fun little collision I just learned about. Arizona's first home game following the December 20th deadline is December 23rd against the Tampa Bay Lightning. That is my birthday. And the two teams that I care even a tiny bit about in the world of hockey. Like, I would think about actually spending some time on my birthday watching Coyotes Lightning, maybe just wearing my Coyotes jersey with a Lightning hat or something.
Get one of those stitched together jerseys.
A house divided. And
this is a house divided.
A tale as old as time. A house divided. Arizona Coyotes, Tampa Bay Lightning. I think generally if people want to have teams they root for in either conference of a league, that's typically fine. But if you're a really big fan, I don't think you can be a diehard fan of two teams. And I'm just admitting on the like, my grandparents moved to Arizona when I was pretty young, and my family, my immediate family, moved to Tampa a few years ago, and I didn't have any hockey loves before that. And so I've got split allegiances. I've been to two hockey games in Tampa now and zero in Phoenix, or I guess Glendale, and it may stay that way, it seems, which is a bummer. And it just is what it is. You literally cannot shame me for sort of rooting for two NHL teams because I don't care enough to feel shame about it.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Also, both teams have some very good throwback jerseys that I do own. And so I feel fine about all of that. But this is wild. I'm not sure. For all of the weird, convoluted conversations we've had about cities paying for for stadiums or arenas to be built, and public money versus private money, and teams relocating for different reasons, and teams wanting better facilities, and cities having to pass some public money to do that. All of that stuff has all, it usually swirls around for a little bit and then ultimately kind of disappears into a fog, because no one, if there's any space where sports, hi, welcome to Almost Entirely Sports. If there's any spot where sports journalism, I think, is lacking, it is throughout the business side of it. Not that no one is doing it well, but there's so much we don't know about the money that owners throughout sports make. The money that goes into these public stadiums. There was the story a while back about owners and their taxes. Like, there was just a thing recently Mina Kimes tweeted about. I think it was Stephen Ross and his taxes and all. Like, there is a wealth of stuff in there, but I don't think that your average fan cares very much. But also, your average fan didn't care about salary caps very much 5 or 10 years ago, I would think. And now it's a real part of how we talk about sports, at least on this show. So anyway, the financial stuff usually just sort of goes away in a mist. But if December 23rd comes and I can't watch my beloved Arizona Coyotes go up against my beloved Tampa Bay Lightning because they've been locked out of their arena, that's bonkers. What happens if they get to that point? Do the Coyotes play all road games? Could their opponents accommodate that? Would they want to? Probably, if you like the ticket sales, whatever. Is the team completely out of Arizona if that happens? If they reach that point, it seems like it's probably trending that way anyway, just because it feels like there's a Coyotes-based Arizona fighting element of a story that comes out every 3 months about this hockey team. And also, I bring it up here in particular because there are Coyotes in the Midwest. I wouldn't even have to change the name. In fact, yeah. I would hope they wouldn't, just because that Southwestern version of their logo that they fully brought back is so good. But there's a big, shiny, newly pink arena downtown here that could definitely put a little ice on the ground.
It could.
I assume that Kansas City isn't as high up on most of these relocation lists as we all want them to be. We all want it to be, us to be, whatever.
We're number one, especially for basketball. Seattle won't get a team before us, never. What kind of history do they have?
And I really I think that if the NBA were to expand by two, I think Seattle and Vegas are really tough to beat.
Vegas doesn't, they don't want professional sports teams there. The gambling.
But Vegas already has the hockey team. So Vegas isn't there to swoop in there. Seattle just got a hockey team.
Never heard of them.
The NHL has expanded to those markets. But if somebody needs a home, we can get you guys the keys to T-Mobile Center. Listen. You know what? The Raptors had to play in Tampa last year. Why don't you just, if it doesn't work out in Arizona, why don't you just come over? I'm not saying anything's going to happen.
A little test drive.
Just come over.
See what you like.
Play your home games here. We're going to give you room and board. You just help us pay, you know, some of the bills there, because you're going to bring all these people into the stadium. And let's just see how it feels. I know the team's not very good right now. In Kansas City, we have learned how to support bad professional teams.
Oh, boy, have we.
We could take one more. Let us be here for the rebuild. Also, unironically, not that any of that was ironic. I actually meant all of that. I guess it would depend on how much I was working or how much people around me expected me to be able to talk about hockey like in an educated way.
Good point.
But if everyone just was like, hey, let's just all be cool about this for a little bit. You don't have to work, but do you want to go? I would probably go to I might go to half a dozen hockey games. Renee had a great time in Tampa. I've had a great time in Tampa twice. It is a good in-person viewing experience. I've been to a couple of Mavericks games here.
I've only been to one NHL game. I had a blast.
Where did you go to an NHL game?
Avalanche. I went out to Denver to watch the Nuggets play. The Avalanche were in town there before, so I watched the Avalanche play the Predators.
Now, look, as a diehard, lifelong, formerly Phoenix, now Arizona Coyotes fan, I would, of course, have to boycott the team for leaving my town of Glendale whenever they come to Kansas City. But as a lifelong Kansas Cityan, you know, I would obviously be thrilled for that. I would have a lot of very conflicting emotions. I wouldn't. I'd be stoked. It would be awesome. And if you haven't gone to a hockey game, go to a Mavericks game up in Independence, or join or sign my change.org petition. You go to change.org/ this isn't a real URL. I can't believe you thought that was a real URL.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Oh, fair.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I'm sticking with hockey for a second here because Chaotic Warrior had an absolute rat-a-tat-tat of comments on the Twitch saying he thinks it's Quebec, likely won't happen, KC and Houston as potential relocation markets there. Putting another team in Texas, I don't know, man. The warm weather hockey thing is sort of weird, but here's the other thing. And he also notes that the Coyotes are embarrassing both on and off the ice, and that is absolutely true. They legitimately seem to be an inept franchise. They're not even paying their rent. I can pay my rent. You're a professional hockey team. But one thing that I wish I would have even thought to mention before this story popped up today, to mention again about Tampa Bay, for us to go to the, for Renee and I to go to the game whenever we were down there, my parents drove us to a ferry. We got onto a boat, took like a 45-minute boat ride across the bay, then got dropped off basically outside the stadium off the boat, went to the game, had dinner before, came back out, hung out, got back on a boat, went back to our original spot. A great experience there. The entire boat is only running on that day because of the Lightning game. It is filled with Lightning jerseys. Everyone on that boat is going to or from the Lightning game. Tampa Bay is not like a hockey magnet as far as I could tell. And they have created such a good community and fan base around this hockey team there in a way that, like, genuinely, now, and I've gone twice, makes me think that Kansas City could do an excellent job in doing something a lot like that. So if you're just saying Coyotes, just come check out the place. Bye, Mom!